A couple of weeks ago, an exhibition opened at the Jewish Museum in New York called Mirroring Evil. It features work by artists under the age of 50, people who came of age a full generation after the Holocaust. Their paintings and photographs and installations have become the center of a heated debate about boundary lines, about conceptual art, about the role of any art in dealing with history. Sarah Fischko took a long, hard look at the show.
In 1988, American composer Steve Reich wrote a piece called Different Trains, which evoked the train trips taken generations ago by Jewish children on the way to concentration camps. Reich had traveled on trains a lot himself as a boy, shuttling between his divorced parents. Later, he thought about the victims of Nazism riding in cattle cars in just about those same years. His piece used fragments of survivors' voices, doubled by instruments, to make an evocative artwork. I was reminded of that piece while thinking about how memory, trauma, history, and the Holocaust are being used by artists now. Examples are on display at the Jewish Museum in New York in its show Mirroring Evil.
There is a certain impossibility of communicating evil, as probably there is an impossibility of communicating the opposite of it.
Piotr Uklansky's work, The Nazis, is one feature of the exhibition. His work uses photos and movie stills, close to 150 high-gloss panels, displaying Nazis as portrayed by actors, great and small, in films over the years.
How can you communicate to anyone, whether it's your son or a viewer, an experience of a concentration camp or a death of your closer person? You know, you have to come up with words that it's already, and this triggers process that somewhere it no longer has anything to do with reality.
So Uklansky and the others in the show make art from the vantage point of those with only a passing connection to the events in question. All of the 13 artists represented are under 50. Their subject is the Holocaust, but it's not the Holocaust as depicted by horrific images of loss and death. Instead, there are slick images of evil, Nazi relics reinterpreted as pop icons, gas canisters with designer labels, a model of a death camp by Tom Sachs made out of a Prada hat box. The show was curated by Norman Clayblatt.
I responded very ambiguously to the work. I dreamt about almost every one of the works as I encountered them. They weren't always good dreams.
Clayblatt says the work threw him into a kind of mortal combat with himself.
It was affecting me so much. It was causing me to ask myself so many questions and asking me to shuttle between the intellectual and the emotional, which I think art can do in a remarkable way.
Art can do that, shuttle you from one place to another. Though it's puzzling that Steve Reich's piece, Different Trains, which sampled survivors' memories and used them as sound, didn't create a furor 15 years ago, but in fact raised him to another level of celebrity. Perhaps it's because visual images are different. In any case, this art now is causing, if you'll pardon the expression, a sensation among those who remember the Holocaust, as well as those who study the Holocaust and who look at the art it's provoked over generations. Scholars like James Young have made this an area of serious study.
It's just this intergenerational divide in the conversation across it.
Young's book, At Memory's Edge, looks at what he calls after images of the Holocaust in contemporary art and architecture.
The survivors' generation would like very much for their children to carry the survivors' legacy forward into the future. The next generation will answer that, well, yes, your experiences have also shaped my life, and I need to explore exactly how, and how your experiences will also shape the lives of the people who come to look at our art now and come to hear our stories, so that the next generation is just a little bit less likely to separate what happened from how it got passed down to them.
How it has been passed down has most certainly shaped the work in Mirroring Evil. It is as much about popular culture as a voracious swallower of images as it is about the Holocaust. Artist Alan Schechner puts his own image holding a Diet Coke can into an iconic photograph of emaciated prisoners at Buchenwald and calls it, "It's the real thing." which may cause us to look at an old image with a new sense of shock, or it may simply cause us to look away.
The question for me about some of these works is what kind of conversations will they generate?
Mariana Hirsch is the author of Family Frames, Photography, Narrative, and Post-Memory.
How layered will these conversations be? Is this shock for its own sake, or is it shock for the sake of probing more about ourselves and about that event?
As one generation shocks and probes, how will another protect its memories?
The further removed we get, the wider the range of what's possible and of what's attempted. And I think that has to be allowed. This is sort of where we are with this exhibition, is the testing of that threshold, the trying to go to the most extreme in order to see what will be allowed, what the taboos still are. And I think that's what we're doing time and again for each generation.
At this moment, the questions may be even more pressing.
The Holocaust, I think, has come down to us as the most traumatic event of the 20th century, something that's unassimilable, that's so large, that's so painful, that it can't really be understood in the frames of reference that we normally have, that we have to stretch our frames in order to understand it. I think when September 11th happened, we had that same feeling that this is so big. We can see it on that small television screen, but it's something that will, for generations to come, we will have to try to understand. As the Holocaust was only a four-year period, and now here we are 55, 60 years later, and we're still feeling its effects.
But the Holocaust, say these artists, is no longer incomparable.
For those who experience them directly, these events can never be a metaphor for anything but themselves. But for those who weren't there, the only possible way they can know them is through analog and through comparison. And I think that's just an historical fact of life that must be addressed and looked squarely in the face. And I think that's what this generation, new generation of artists is trying to do.
So with this art, we're shuttled back and forth between intellect and emotion, between unspeakable evil and perverse glamour. It would be so much easier to just be delivered, as we are by a painting by Cézanne, for example, of, say, an apple. A great artist can take an inconsequential object, like an apple, and make it seem monumental. How do you take something that is truly monumental and make it art? For Studio 360, I'm Sarah Fischko.